Good afternoon, and welcome to Preparing for Divorce, a monthly support call for those considering, preparing for, or navigating through divorce. It is 12:10 p.m., and we always start on time, so we're going to begin our call now. A quick note before we actually begin, we are using technology for this call. It is generally very reliable for us, but if for any reason you get bumped off the call, simply call back in. We will be here. I also want to let you know that this call is going to be recorded. When we turn the recording on in just a moment, all lines except mine and those of the guests will be muted to ensure that we have a high-quality recording. And actually, I think we are already recording, so I can skip that. You will receive a link to this recording after the call. We do, however, want you to be able to reach out to us with questions following the call, so we will make sure that you receive contact information at the end of this call. All right. Well, my name is Pamela Elaine, your host today for our monthly support call on preparing for divorce. For those of you who are used to hearing Adina Laver, I may be a new voice. Adina Laver usually hosts the calls. Adina's not with us today, but she will be back with us again in the near future. This is my third time hosting the support calls. I remain humble and honored to have been given this opportunity to interview guests, to participate with Mainline Family Law, and to be on the call with all of you who are listening in. These calls are sponsored monthly by Mainline Family Law Center, a divorce mediation firm that takes a holistic, integrated approach to assisting clients in navigating divorce in a healthy way. Just a little bit about me. I was married for 18 years and have been divorced for 3. I am also the mother of a 16, 15, 14, and 10-year-old. In my search for answers, how to thrive, not just survive, after divorce, I discovered a 4-part beauty practice of self-care that I teach other women to do. I am also a workshop facilitator and an author of the book, Muddy High Heels, 14 Lessons Learned from My Breakdown, Breakup, and Breakthrough. For those of you who are new to our calls, you are tuned in to a conversation between myself and our guests to bring you valuable information about removing guilt and shame from divorce. In order to bring you the most amount of information, we do not take live questions, though we are very eager for you to get all the support you need. At the end of the call, we will let you know how you can reach out to us, follow up, and ask questions. Please remember, if for any reason you get bumped off this conference line, just call right back in. No worries. The title of our call today is Removing Guilt and Shame from Divorce. We're going to talk in depth about the emotions of guilt and shame. These emotions we experience going through divorce often can predict whether we survive or crash and burn. I am enthusiastic about this call because my guest will help us see these emotions for the value they could bring and how to relate to them. Now I'd like to introduce our guest for today, Katie Moody. Katie Moody is an experienced psychotherapist and educator who spent the first half of her career working in the corporate world and the latter 15 years in psychotherapy practice. Her current practice is in Devon, Pennsylvania, where she works therapeutically with adults and teens in individual, couple, and group settings. Areas of particular professional interest are trauma, anxiety, depression, self-esteem, loss, and divorce. Born and educated in the UK, Katie has lived in the US for 10 years, and has plenty of experience parenting young adults, as she has a 21-year-old and a 20-year-old of her own. I am on the board of the Women's Resource Center in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Katie Moody is our go-to therapist on navigating the emotional terrain of divorce. Katie provides our organization with top-notch programs for women, and we are grateful for that. Welcome, Katie.
Oh, thank you very much, Pamela Elaine. I'm flattered at that description.
I am going to have such a great time talking to you because I just love your British accent. It's just so cool.
I know.
It's always warm and comforting, you know?
Having been here 10 years now, I kind of forget that I have it, and sometimes it still brings me up when people say, I just want to listen to you speak,
absolutely.
You know. So, so I do relaxation work with some of my clients, and they say, yeah, but me saying it is not the same. I need the British accent that goes with it.
Exactly. So, thank you for being on the call with us today and for sharing with us what you're going to share with us about guilt and shame and some of the other emotions that go along with those two in this difficult place called divorce. In your bio that I just read, it says that one of the areas of expertise is trauma. I found that very interesting because going through divorce is absolutely or can be a very traumatic experience.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that can be varying degrees for individuals, but divorce is known to be one of the most traumatic and, let's use the word, stressful events that we can encounter because all of our kind of anchors, all of our givens, you know, it's about our home, oftentimes our sense of financial security, how we parent, how we live, it's all going to be turned topsy-turvy. And that can be very brutal from day to day, from week to week, and oftentimes it can extend over into many months and sometimes several years.
Mm-hmm.
And as it is so stressful, when we are that stressed, we go to some of our darkest places in terms of who we are and how we are. We somehow lose some of our more rational cognitive abilities, kind of fly out the window because it really is tugging at our innermost strands of who we are and how we are in our world.
Well, let's dig into shame and guilt. Could you offer to us a very easy to understand definition of both shame and guilt?
Yeah, for sure. And if anyone is interested, there's a lady called Brené Brown who has done a lot of research around shame, and she does some TED Talks. So I kind of turn to her when I think about what is the definition and what are these two. But shame really is about how we feel about ourselves. Whereas guilt is much more about how we, if you like, experience ourselves in terms of our behaviors and our actions. So there are differences between those, very significant differences. So shame will take us into places of feeling bad about who we are. We feel like a failure. We somehow feel less than. Whereas guilt, as I say, is about how we approach things, what we do, that you know, nasty phone call we made that we really wish we didn't. So I think everyone feels levels of guilt. The shame piece can oftentimes, you know, some people walk around the world feeling some levels of shame to a greater or lesser degree. But when we arrive in a stressful situation, that can really floor us, that sense that we're not really a very good person, because if we were, our marriages would be okay. We'd be able to be in a good relationship. So shame is more toxic, I sense than guilt. And there is some levels of kind of good guilt, I think.
Do tell.
Yeah. In terms that good guilt can be our moral compass. You know, we all have pieces within ourselves that sometimes we think, oh, I just want to knock his lights out. And then we mm-hmm. step back and think, oh, no, that's just a thought. So our good guilt, our good sense of shame, if you like, we know we're not going to do that. So that, you know, having good guilt or a certain sort of small level of shame about ourselves is we know we're not going to go to that place. So that's our moral compass for ourselves. That's the standards to which we hold ourselves to. So that's the good and the healthy aspect. It's the unhealthy aspects that can cause us more difficulty during the divorce process.
Katie, can one have shame and guilt simultaneously?
Yes.
If that's the case, then how is it even possible for an individual to recognize that they're in these feelings of shame and guilt?
That's a good question, because how do we know if we're feeling a sense of shame? I mean, for me, I think shame is one of those feelings that really hits us in the gut. You know, when we feel shame, it's like, it's hard for you to see me, but I'm going to make the noise. It's kind of like feeling. It's kind of like a hole has emptied up in the middle of us and we want to disappear inside of it kind of feeling.
Interesting. So we really need to be in tune with what's going on a visceral level or physiologically.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That can give us some really good clues as to what is going on for ourselves. Whereas I think guilt tends to maybe be more of a cognitive piece rather than an emotion.
Interesting. You know, one of the things I was thinking is, you know, when you think about divorce, when you go through divorce, we think very much about, these are the steps I have to take. I have to get a lawyer, then the lawyer and I have to negotiate with the ex, and we've got to do this, we've got to file these papers, that paper, we've got to show up in court. There's a lot of method, systems, processes, and things to do in divorce. So one is not really thinking necessarily about the method, processes, and things you got to do with respect to your emotions. But I was thinking, can we just not deal with the emotions and get the stuff done that we need to get done in order to get through this divorce and get out of it? Like, emotions are just a little bit annoying.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember, you know, you talked about the Women's Resource Center, and I facilitate the support groups there. And when I spoke to that, there was one lady there that actually said to me, she said, "You mean I've got to feel them?" And, you know, I'm kind of smiling, but that really hit her. And I'm afraid, yes, you know, it's one really good analogy is that if you can imagine, this is what firefighters talk about, is that our sense, if we see a bushfire, our instinct is to turn and run. But the trouble is that fire comes along behind us.
Mm-hmm.
But the safest thing to do is to turn around, is to face the fire, is to take whatever protective means we have around us and go straight through, because the safest place is on the other side. Fires don't turn around and come backwards because there's nothing to burn. So yes, we need to find appropriate ways to process them, to learn about them, to try and face them, and find appropriate, friendly, supportive individuals to help us do that, whether that is a professional whether it is in a support group, whether you have, you know, one of those friends that is just, you know, the perfect friend to have around. And sometimes we never know who those people are going to be, but someone that is going to really support you through however it is that you're going to kind of name these emotions sometimes. The naming can often be really helpful. You know, I talk with people about the idea of keeping, you know, if you're feeling senses of guilt, well, let's write down what all those guilty pieces are and then see if you can just kind of place them for a while by writing about them. But you're not running away from them. You've named them, you've acknowledged them, and that is all part and parcel of how we process our emotions. And I know that in itself is terrifying. And that's
it
why
is.
I say, yeah,
it,
absolutely.
It's terrifying, and it's terrifying because we're not taught how to process our emotions. It's not a course in school. It's not a prerequisite for college courses. It's kind of loosey-goosey. It's like we're given these emotions, and we don't know really what to do with them, at least the dark ones, I would say. We know happiness and joy and ecstasy, right? Those are real easy. But sadness and guilt and shame and regret, those, we don't know how to deal with those feelings, those emotions. So when I hear what you're saying, I'm thinking, well, I can call my friend, but part of the problem that I would have with that is I would want to call my friend every day, several times a day, and eventually she's going to get sick of hearing from me. So can you help us for a moment? What would be some of the top three steps, I would say, maybe that's the right word, top three, five, I don't know, steps that one can go through in order to process shame, guilt, regret, sadness, and anger, any one of those you can take?
Well, I think that, you know, in some ways it will a little bit differ from person to person as to what's going to be most helpful, and the level of kind of darkness, if you like, of some of those emotions. Mm-hmm. And some of us typically might lean more to having a stronger kind of cognitive thinking, rational way of looking at life in the world. And some people will tend to be more at the feeling expressive end of the world. So there are differences, and you can tell that by, you can notice your own language. If you're someone that says, well, I think this is true, well, then you're a thinking cognitive person. If you're someone that's kind of noticing in yourself, you say, well, I feel this to be the right way to go, you're a more of a feeling kind of oriented person. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you were talking about in your introduction, Pamela Elaine, about, you know, self-care and self-care through this process of seeing yourself with these emotions is really, really key in terms of getting to know what is most helpful for you. You're right. Once you've phoned that friend at 1 o'clock in the morning two or three times, they're not going to want to keep hearing from you.
They're not going to pick up the phone.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, the worst thing about shame is that oftentimes shame is about how we feel about being ourselves. So it's a self-feeding negative toxicity is the pattern to kind of try and break out of. So for me, I think one of the key things is to try and find ways of offering yourself compassion and kindness. So, you know, some people always go...
So what does that look like?
Well...
I like that, what you said.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things like you know, given yourself a kindness or self-compassion prescription, you know, much like you would do if you went to the doctors. So what would your own compassionate prescription look like? I mean, for some people, that may be giving themselves a massage once a week in terms of providing that self-care for oneself, or going for a yoga class that has elements of meditation or spirituality. But I think sometimes when it's about one's relationship with oneself, and this might sound a little kind of weird or odd, but I work with people on having that self-dialogue with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that that looks is to, maybe you want to try this for yourself, Pamela, once you've got off air, but to go to a mirror, and you can make it a small mirror so that you don't have to see all of you, because I know if you're my kind of age, you know, that's not such a kind of kindly thing to do as we're coasting through our 50s. But look into your own eyes. You know, don't look at the rest. And I think you'll find that most of us don't do that, and I'm including me in this too. We don't often look in our own eyes, but look in your own eyes. And if you can't do any more than that, and many people, that is enough to make you collapse in tears, because we don't see ourselves very often. Mm. We're so critical of ourselves, and that's the shame piece and the self-blame piece. But to look in the mirror and use your own name, because we know that that connects ourselves with ourselves on a different level. It's like wandering around the mall. You know, if you hear someone saying Pamela Elaine, you can't help but acknowledge that. So use your name and say just one small phrase that is offering yourself compassion. It could be something like, I'm sorry for all that you're going through today.
Yeah.
Or,
and
go on, carry on.
Well, when you just said that, that touched me, that moved me. And one of the things that I would add to that is, and you're a good person. Like, maybe you've made mistakes, Pamela Elaine, Katie Moody, but you're a good person. That,
yeah,
to me, is a very powerful, compassionate statement to offer to oneself. Because with shame, as you're explaining, it's really easy to beat yourself up.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And
so,
and I was going to say, and you know, a piece with that is that maybe, you know, we're here talking about shame and guilt, and maybe we are looking at ourselves and saying, yeah, I feel a little bit bad about, you know, maybe I did send off that text message when I was super angry and I really wished I hadn't. Or maybe I bad-mouthed my ex or soon-to-be ex to the children. You know, we are human. So maybe that dialogue may be one around forgiving yourself.
I love that. I love that.
You know, from a sense of, I forgive that you made that text message yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mistake. You are, as you said, you are a good person.
Yeah. One of the things that I have started to practice with this self-care that I mentioned earlier in the introduction. And I did this for 30 days, every single day.
Mm-hmm.
I would declare to myself, I am good enough, and then I would finish the sentence. I am good enough to forgive myself. I am good enough for happiness. I am good enough to get through this divorce and thrive. I would say those things to myself because I recognize that I was really living in a lot of shame over the divorce. I mentioned I have four kids. It was really tough for me. But making those compassionate statements, to use yours, I like that, of I am good enough, started to change my inner dialogue with myself from one of you're a bad, bad person, Pamela, Elaine, to you really are a good person. And I just want to offer that up along with what you said to our listeners as an additional tip or technique to use in moving beyond shame.
Yeah.
So here's my question. I'm thinking about two individuals, and I want to see if you can distinguish for me a likely outcome. Person A, going through divorce, absolutely refuses to deal with shame, guilt, regret, anger, sadness, any of those. And person B takes those on and chooses to process through them. Can you speak to what might be a predictable, if that's fair to ask, predictable outcome for those two individuals going through a very, let's just assume it's a very similar type of divorce. What might be an outcome for the one who deals and the one who does not deal?
Well, I guess we can probably all predict that person B will come out of the other end having kind of grown from that. I could wish that there were less, you know, traumatic circumstances that presented for that growth. But there are opportunities in everything that is presented to us personally. You know, someone once said to me that there is more opportunity for growth from those difficult, dark emotions than there is from the other emotions. That it gives us a sense of, it builds our resilience for the future. Because living a life is about living through difficulty as well as living through ease. Because that's what living is. And I think, you know, to take on board these difficult feelings of shame and guilt and is about looking at what was in this relationship. We kind of haven't really talked about blaming and things, but you know, when I talk with individuals, I always say that there's three entities in a relationship. So, you know, there's each partner, and then the third piece is the relationship itself. And typically, a relationship doesn't survive because it's not being fed well. And that takes two individuals to feed it well. So in terms of looking at kind of blame, there isn't blame to be laid at any one door or the other, because blaming can often lead us to feel like helpless victims. It's about looking at what is the reality of our relationship, the story of our relationship, in terms of, okay, there were some things there that, you know, maybe we had a difference around our parenting, for example, that gave rise to seeing that we had a different set of values around that. And typically we tend to parent from the way we were parented. So that's another whole kind of level of intricacy in a relationship. But it's important to know for ourselves, what was it that was going on for me in terms of how I am in a relationship? Are there any kind of what we might call psychological games that I'm playing here, that we are playing, that is the pattern that we set up that was not good for both of us? You know, what was my part and what was my partner's part? You know, there's always there's two people. There's wherever there's a dependent, there's a codependent. So if you are able, with appropriate support again, to take an honest inventory, for want of a better word, of, you know, what was my part in this? Okay, well, you know, when we had a conflict, I know what I tended to do was get overly aggressive and go in as the pursuer to get an answer to, I needed to be right, for example, and to know that that's how I was. And rather than shaming oneself with that, to say, okay, that's a piece of awareness about myself, and how am I going to be with learning to be different around that? And I know I'm getting a little complicated, but do you get the gist of what I'm saying? Whereas if we do like the ostrich and put our head in the sand and not kind of take a little peek, and I'm not saying we have to stand up there and say, hey, throw it all at me, I can take it all. You know, little palatable piece by piece, and that's what I mean by appropriate ways and supportive ways. And certainly not self-blaming ways and not blaming the other partner. That's where the compassion needs to come in. But that can be really helpful to take you through this process in a healthy way.
Well, when you said, Katie, oh, it does, because when you said that about blame, that really no party is to blame, you said it better. I immediately heard 3,000 voices in my ear say, oh, no, 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 he absolutely is to blame, or she absolutely is to blame for this because she did this, 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 and this. We can pull out the text messages and prove to you how she is to blame. We can pull out the emails and absolutely determine that he is to blame. Blame is a big business in divorce.
Mm-hmm.
How in the world does one not blame when we have all the evidence to support that the other person is at fault?
Of course we do. And I think...
I'm going to pull up a few right now while I'm on the phone.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And don't we all want to go to that place?
Yes,
it's kind of
right.
Like, you know, I'm seeing, you know, my kids lined up with, you know, when I go, and yes, who did this? And they're all going, well, it wasn't me, it was him, you know,
wasn't
and the
me?
Little
yes.
one down at the end of the line.
Right.
So let's also remember that, you know, that can be a family pattern. You know, I grew up in a family myself. You know, I don't mind owning this one where it was all about, oh, let's find out who's to blame, as though that actually solves anything. And it doesn't, right? Because all it does is it makes one person feel bad and the other person feeling like they have the power. But actually, in a way, the person that's doing the blaming can leave us feeling like a helpless victim, which is, you know, which if you see that pattern, that's kind of leading us into putting ourselves in that victim role, because it's all someone else's fault. And look at all the emails we have and the text messages. And of course, you know, that's where, you know, the difference, if you like, between guilt and shame. You know, we all do those things that we know someone else has almost deliberately done something to hurt us in that email, for example. But I think if we get into that pattern, what we're really doing is looking at what as therapists, if you like, we call that a secondary emotion.
Okay.
When oftentimes, because those secondary emotions are palatable, we can talk about them. You know, I noticed this in the support groups with ladies. If one lady comes in wanting to really husband bash, wow, everyone joins in. And, you know, I let it run for a little while, and then I kind of go, hey, you know, I'm not sure that this is going to be helpful for us down the road. So let's just rein that in for a minute. So those are secondary palatable emotions, like anger, for example. You know, most of us are pretty okay talking about how angry we are. But when it comes to what's often underneath that secondary emotion is a primary emotion. And the primary emotion is usually hurt. It's usually hurt and loss and sadness. And the thing is, we want to do anything to protect us, our hurt selves.
Sure.
And often that comes out in these more aggressive kind of moves that we all do, because that's how we protect ourselves. You know, we come out of our corner fighting. So it's understandable, but the trouble is it then leads us back into feeling shame. We feel ashamed of ourselves afterwards.
What I'm getting from what you're saying, Katie, is with shame, with guilt, anger, even blame, that all of these emotions affect or drive some of our decisions in divorce. That if we are not able to manage these emotions, face them, process them, they can have a huge impact on the decisions that we make going forward. So it sounds like to me it is to our advantage going through divorce, and really any relationship, really, is to our advantage, it sounds like, to process through these emotions so that we can be clearer in the decisions that we make that will last a lifetime. What do you think?
Yes. I mean, I agree. I mean, I think in any kind of decision-making, negotiation type of environment, it's best to leave one's emotions outside of that. I think that I think, though, with something like anger can be a motivator. So sometimes I think it's about having an awareness for yourself that sometimes, you know, someone will say, oh, well, it's the straw that broke the camel's back. It's that. So sometimes notice whether you can use your anger to maybe motivate you to do the research about finding a good lawyer, do the research about the financial settlement. So you can use your emotions in that way, but then be very careful about taking any emotions into, you know, meetings with your lawyer, for example, or your mediator. Because, you know, if you are negotiating, you know, I knew a lady who said, oh, I just wanted to give him everything to escape and to get out. And I don't know whether she will regret that at any point, and maybe she won't. But and I can understand her position, but if she were making that decision from an unaware emotional place, that can be dangerous. So, you know, I encourage people, if they can, to kind of ask themselves something. Why am I choosing this particular decision? You know, what is
that? Why am I choosing? Yes, I like that.
Yeah, to try and engage this cognitive part of ourselves, and to not to bring too many emotions into it. You know, use maybe some of your emotions to drive yourself, if you like, but not to actually do any signing off of anything, or, you know, to make those choices and decisions that are really key and important to your future.
Katie, the title of this call today is Removing Guilt and Shame.
Yeah.
Listening to you for this time, I'm wondering if remove is really the right action word. Is there a more appropriate word that we can apply here than remove guilt and shame?
Well, I mean, I love that you brought us back to that, actually, Pamela Elaine, because as you said that, you know, as you brought us back to the title of remove, and you said what is the action word, I just completely visually, I took off the RE.
Oh. Move,
and
kind of, guilt, and shame.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so
I like that.
It went to, in my mind, move through. You know, I would love to say, well, we'll do A, B, C, D, all the way through to Z. You know, I've written a Bible about 10 steps to. and I think, you know, in the moment, maybe you could remove a piece of shame for yourself. And I'd love to, mm-hmm. I do so much work with people around shame. And, you know, I have so much hope for the human psyche that we can move through shame and guilt and all these very toxic emotions. But it is it's a life journey. And it is about moving through difficult emotions in a way that, you know, is about providing compassion to yourself and I think using one of your words, it, in a way that honors yourself, honors your needs, honors the needs of your children and your family, and potentially, if you're able to, honor the needs of your ex-loved one.
Yeah.
As another human being.
I love that word. I think move is such a powerful word. Not run, not hide, but move. That's I think that's a wonderful way to take a look at it, because it almost takes the scary edge off of the process of shame and guilt. It doesn't seem so scary when you offer up to move through guilt and shame. Well, Katie, unfortunately, our time is coming to a conclusion. Can you believe that? I can talk to you about this all day. We do have to wrap up.
I know, and I feel so honored to be able to share this. And for everyone that's listening, I really hope that this has been helpful to you, even if you just picked up like one sentence from it. That really is my wish for everyone listening in.
Well, I'm going to allow you also, if you would, Katie, to just offer one last golden nugget for our listeners or a resource you want to point people to.
Oh, wow. I'm going to point you to the support group at the Women's Resource Center, not because I facilitate it, but because I know that for so many people, what has been most helpful is that in some way it makes whatever they're feeling feel normal, and that you're not in this alone. I hesitated to use that word normal. It's not a word I like to use, but maybe usual. It's kind of like you're not in this alone, and that there aren't immediate solutions, but at least find some other souls that will help hold your hand and have your back going through this process.
Awesome. And Katie, thank you for that, Katie. How can people reach you? Tell us how they get in touch with you.
With me personally?
Yes.
By all means, I'm happy to give out my phone number on air, which is 484-802-4833, which is my own personal phone number. And I'm more than happy to talk with anyone through the process and to feed you into any other resources that you need. And if you're interested in the Women's Resource Center and the next support group, we have another one starting in June. We have a date for that. And their phone number is 610-687-6391. And they also offer some legal consultation as well. That I think if the more information that you have at your fingertips can often take the fear and some of the overwhelm and can soften that piece for you.
Yes, so let's give those two numbers again, your number, Katie, and the number to the Women's Resource Center in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
My number is 484-802-4833, and the Women's Resource Center in Wayne is 610-687-6391.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Katie. Mainline Family Law can be reached via the website myhealthydivorce.com. You want to spend time on their website because it is full of useful information you may not know exists to help you. I, Pamela Elaine, can be reached via my website, which is mymuddyhighheels.com. mymuddyhighheels.com. Please join us next month for another insightful, engaging conversation to help you achieve a healthy divorce. Be sure to check out myhealthydivorce.com for all of the upcoming topics. Again, thanks so much to my guest, Katie Moody. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Until our next time, listeners, please remember, you can have a healthy divorce. It's how you divorce that matters. Take care.
Thank you.